Mike, we're back. Here we are, 102.9 FM, folks, in Stouffville. When I've got a minute and when this is on my mind, I'm going to say, will someone out there help us get a meeting going here in Stouffville? We need a meeting to where we can come together, where people can share, where they can know they can let go and be assured that nothing is going to leave the room where that goes on. It's not like being in the radio station where we purposefully say what we want to get out there, and where most of us, by the way, have thrown our anonymity out the window for the sake of maybe the betterment of society, or maybe we're getting to a place where we feel that it's a sacrifice worth making. But we also know that those who feel a lot of shame, the last thing they want to do is blast off and tell everybody about their lives, and we understand that, and that's why anonymity is so important to us. So folks, you're protected all the way around with us, whether even on the radio, and you know, whether we use a fake name. Mike is really Linda. That's just a joke.
Michelle.
But anyways, seriously folks, we'd love to have somebody. So you know, get in touch with Scott, or go to sharingtheburden.ca. Connect with us that way, or Scott with two T's at sharingtheburden.ca. If you have to talk, 647-222-0515. Pretty much any time. That means that messages will be taken while I'm sleeping. Oh, Mike, we talked perfection very lightly before the ad, and you said you're a perfectionist. Has that cost you at all?
Oh yeah, it drives me crazy. I'm always constantly worried about jobs and trying to please people, yeah. Right? And it's it affects me. It definitely does. It's a lot of stress.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned a program you or I did on the way over, and it was called Al-Anon, which is you know, for people affected by other people's drinking. And in many cases, a lot of what you or I experience is probably because of having grown up with some alcoholism around the family, or maybe right in the family, and then certainly not necessarily anything to do with whether we would have ended up with an addiction or not. But when you grow up in that, it makes a big difference, and it often results in imperfection. You know, and I don't know if that's the case with you, or if it had anything to do with it, but the reason I mention Al-Anon is because although people spend a lot of time in their lives around 12-step, they often don't spend enough time with the people who are discussing more how the affected by relates to who they are today, as opposed to just focusing on not doing a certain, you know, substance or behavior pattern, and so on like that. So I don't know, where are you at that way? Like you've said you're a perfectionist and it drives you nuts, and you know, can you relate to that at all? Or?
Well, I try to do the best I can do, and if I don't feel like it's properly done, or if I'm not getting to where I want to be, I get discouraged and disappointed. And then I don't even want to do it no more, right? It's I have to stay positive and have that energy keep going, the positive thoughts. Otherwise, I can feed into negativity so quick, and next thing I know, I'm depressed. I don't even want to finish the job. But I have to keep trucking, you know. I got to keep plugging. This program taught me a lot, and you know, I got to get through my day no matter what. If it takes a slogan, a reading, the serenity prayer, or just praying, whatever it takes, I've got to get through it no matter what, without turning to alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of it, though, that's what I was mentioning, Al-Anon, because we do take on a whole bunch of traits, even if we never touch the substance, and many don't. You know, you'll see families where it's kind of divided, half will, you know, pick up the genetics and become addict, alcoholic, and the other half become control freaks, you know, and usually we're a combination of all those things, but the ones who just become control freaks are harder to handle in many respects than the person who took up a substance.
Yeah.
You know, and for sure, neither one works, and the perfectionism, as you know, it does not work. It's a, you know, you you turn your own perfection into expectations for the way everything is done by everybody else too. So if you're doing a job, you know, and you've got a couple of assistants and you know, they look a little lazy or something. I know, I can imagine, because you told me how, you know, you'll take this humongous job and just go at it and, you know, stir concrete with a spoon if you have to, whatever you've got to do to get that thing done, done fast, done perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, what's it like for the other guys around who can't do that or simply it doesn't fit with who they are? You know what I mean? It all takes its toll, doesn't it? Like, on you, that's what I like about the program that deals with, well, how do we feel about, you know, what we've become, even if we have the other stuff under control or not, you know. A lot of the experts today say underlying dependency is codependency, where we're trying to satisfy the insides of ourselves by people, places, things, controlling things on the outside. So, and you're doing a good job. I mean, you're keeping yourself active and comfortable and out of harm's way in terms of whatever, you know, substance abuses you may find attractive or not. Where you are in your recovery now, and I don't know how, you know, how long you've been around or what you're doing, but as you look back, are you getting more and more comfortable without anything to help you in that way or to take you away from reality? I mean, you're not using, I know that, anything, so...
Yeah,
what's
I have 2 years and almost 4 months clean now, and it's been quite the journey. I've been through a lot, and I love this program, and I stuck with it because I knew I had to this time. I've been down this road too many times, and this time I really want it. Yeah, I put expectations on people that I hire, and I know that they're only trying to do the best job they can do, and I shouldn't yell at them, and because I'm such a perfectionist, so I'm really picky, but I have to accept the fact this guy's doing the best job he can do, right? And let it be at that, and not to treat people that way, just because I'm that way, right? I have to even stop beating myself up sometimes, you know? I'm my worst critic. But, you know, I have to, at the end of the day, I have to step back and say, hey, I did the best I could do today.
You know, that's a key too. Even if during the day, you know, I exploded 95,000 times, I still have to accept at the end of the day that was the best Scott could do with what was going on in his life, you know. And if I don't accept Scott at the end of the day, I'm sure not accepting anyone else. So
that's right.
You know, even like I say, even the very things that made me explode, I have to be forgiving to Scott and you know, because if I don't forgive him, he's going to make a mess of tomorrow. And, you know, today's already done, and that's messed up, but it's gone. It's history now. History, I believe, is perfect, you know, in God's whole realm. I believe that everything has a place, and once it's behind you, like, leave it there. Other than for reminders that, you know, like our slogan, I remember when. So we need to remember where we've been, what we've done, but we don't want to go there and stay there. So I think it's a big part of the program too, is you know, doing each step in its as close to we can as to perfection. And this one would be you know, repairing or remedying whatever goes wrong during the day before another day comes up, or at least have a plan of how we're gonna remedy whatever went on. Looking at something here, Mike, and it's somewhat interesting, and it's again has to do with the same reading, but I've highlighted here where it says, simply identify a comfortable, quiet spot where you can pause to reflect on your life. And the author here is talking about a place you can go daily, and I mentioned, like, my only sanctuary really is my car, because of just by virtue of what goes on in my home, you know, my wife having an animal care business, there's always a lot of animal noises, mostly barking going on. So there's never constant peace, and there's not enough soundproofing or anything like that in any one particular room. So I know that. And I mean, I can get in my car and I can be anywhere, you know. And, you know, as I said, I've spent the money on a car. Because I know how important it is that I get away and have that quiet time, you know, and that time when I can be, in my life anyway, when I can just be in what I sense as the presence of God, and only God. So in other words, I'm there, and you know, whatever God represents to me is there with me, and I just reflect on that, I relax on that, and I don't push my brain in any way, shape, or form to go forward, back, left, or right. I just kind of try and take in that time, you know, and it does a lot for me. Like without that, I'm never sure if you know, if the day's going to go right. Actually, I have to start my day that way too. Not in the car, but just in the quietude before things get going in the home. I can do that at you know, 4, 6 in the morning or something like that. But what about you? Do you have a way to go to a quiet place? Do you do that? Is that part of your regimen, or do you fit it in as you can?
My favorite place is in my bedroom, unfortunately, but that's because I have my silence there. I don't watch any TV anymore, very little, and that's where I gather my thoughts. It's quiet. I meditate every day. I think about my past, even. And a lot of it, I don't even like to look at it, but I have to. I have to accept my past. I have to accept my present and whatever the future brings. But tolerance, patience, and acceptance is my key every day. I have to keep that in my mind because I am powerless over people, places, and things, and I can't let them control my day. So if I practice patience, tolerance, and acceptance, it's going to make it a lot easier on me. That way I can lift all that pressure off my head. Right, it's not easy. I don't drive, and I have to ride public transit, and people drive me crazy. But it's a good learning experience for me every day, because I practice that tolerance, right? And it's not easy.
Well, it's interesting you say it that way, because I was just thinking of you, and of course road rage came to my mind, and I'm thinking, you know, it was probably wise for you, and I know you just made a decision not to drive anymore. It wasn't that you had to make that decision. You just made it. So that's few and far between. There are people who make that decision. So you know, congratulations on that one, and it's powerful. And road rage is killing people literally today. It's you know, you never know when you decide to get out of the car whether someone's going to come out and blow you away. So I mean, it's. It's no joke. Tell me, as you look back, give us a little bit about your background before you came to some sort of recovery program. You know, what was life like? I know you lived quite a, you know, I've heard parts of your story. You've lived quite a life, and you're American born, I understand, and you know, but you love Canada by the sounds of it, and you see little reason to travel anywhere. But what was it like in the earlier days for you, growing up?
It was rough. My parents were entertainers. They worked nights, and my sister was supposed to be the babysitter. So there was no discipline at my house. Pretty much ran wild, and that had a big impact on my future because I turned into a really bad person because I had no discipline, and my parents weren't really excellent role models like they're supposed to. They exposed me to a lot of things that kids shouldn't have been exposed to. But you know what? I can look back at that now, and it doesn't play a big part in my life because I've accepted that, right? Whatever happened, it's in my past, and I can't let that control me today. I have to forgive and not forget, not shut the door on it, but you know, pray for those people that harmed me, and you know, and pretty much accept that, and let go and let God. And that's worked for me, and you know, the horrible things that I experienced and went through, I'm sure some kids have probably went through worse, but it doesn't matter. It's the same thing, and we all have feelings, and that's what it mostly affected me, was my feelings. I didn't know how to feel. I had numbed all my feelings from all that pain so many years, and now I don't have to worry about all that. I live so free and humble now. My past doesn't bother me. I accept for whatever it was, but the person I am today, it makes me look back at my past that I made it through it. I survived all those years, and that's exactly what it was, survival. And I managed to raise two daughters, and the opposite that I was raised, because I made a pact to myself that if I ever did have kids, I would never raise them the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me on that note, and we've had many people on the show talking about you know, how they've changed over the years with the program and so on. So you come from a place where there's obviously abuse of one kind or another, whether it's emotional, mental, physical, or sexual, or whatever. It doesn't really matter. In the end, it's the same thing. But you live through that, and mm-hmm. you vow somewhere along the way that obvious mistakes that were made with the treatment of you in your life, in your earlier life, would not be made with your offspring, with your kids, you know. And you seem to have been able to do that. Now, the other side of the coin there is, you know, do we go from running wild? And I was the same, by the way. I just did what I wanted to do, and I didn't seem to have any objection from anybody. I just did what I wanted, went where I wanted, came and went when I wanted, and it didn't seem to bother anybody. But anyway, the other side of the coin over there was, if I'm gonna make sure that they're not doing that kind of stuff, you know, how am I gonna do that? And what is it gonna be like to be under me as a dad or a mom, whatever the case may be? You know, am I gonna be too controlling? You know, and that's, I don't know, did you ever fall into that with your kids at all? And, you know, have you been able to sit and talk with your kids kind of the way you and I are talking now? You know, talking feelings and depth and so on, you know, how do you think I did, you know, as your dad, and, you know, and be honest with me, you know, did I ever over-control this and that? Because they need to get stuff out too, right? Like, and the sooner they start getting stuff out, don't wait till you're, you know, 15 years in, you know, either in a jail or on a street, or, you know, get yourself into where you, you know, and you probably do have the propensity towards a addiction coming from the genetics of, you know, of addiction, alcoholism, and so on. So don't be surprised, but don't tease it, don't trigger it, you know. Did you ever find it that you could have those conversations with your girls?
Oh, yeah. We are really close to my daughters, me and my wife. My wife was a stay-at-home mom for 20 years, and it made a big impact on my daughters. Of course, I was working all the time, and I turned invisible to them because I was never home. So I stopped that too. I stopped working nights and weekends as much as I used to do, because it wasn't fair for them either. But, you know, I brought my daughter to work with me a couple weeks ago, and she gave me the best compliment in the world. It was about 3/4 through the day. We were painting a condominium, and she goes to me, "Dad, you've changed." And I almost dropped my paintbrush. I go, "What do you mean?" You know, I was so happy to hear someone to see something in me, because I used to put that expectations on people before. Right? Look at me, I'm doing so good. And then no one would compliment me. So I said, why even bother? I wasn't really doing it for me. Now I do it for me, and the rewards are incredible. My daughter says, "You change. You don't freak out so easily at all. Like when someone's in my way, I'm like, get out of my way before, because when I'm busy, I'm moving pretty quick, and they know that. So they get out of my way, and she noticed that I never said get out of my way the whole day. So that's a big change for me, because, you know, I'm always in a rush, no patience. Yeah. Today I have patience. I had to slow down, because that'll drive you insane, always worrying about getting something done or having to accomplish something. If I don't accomplish something in a day, it's wasted to me. I feel like it's a big blur and blah. I can never get this day back. It's history now. So if I don't do something that day, these are physically, mentally, you know, to accomplish even something, right? Little. If I don't, I feel empty at the end of the day. So going to meetings, that's what fulfills my days. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I can go there and get positive thoughts, thinking, and I'm around the fellowship. I'm not around negative people in a bar. I can look back about that now and go, wow, what did I ever get out of that bar stool, you know? Yeah. And absolutely nothing. But today, things have changed a lot for me, and I'm totally grateful. This program is incredible. I went for it big time this time, and I stuck with it. and I'm giving it all I got, and the rewards are incredible. The more I read, the more I learn. It's about me, and that's so important, because I didn't know about Mike for so many years. I thought life was just working, raising kids, and that was it, right? And dying. But alcohol took a lot of that away from me most of my life. And here I am, 56, 2.5 years clean finally. But I've been surviving for the last 30 years like that. I went through rehab in my 20s. After my father had passed away, I turned to crack cocaine, and it took me down within 3 months. And then I went to the rehab for 7 months. And did very well, and I remembered everything they taught me, because if you're somewhere 7 months, you're going to sponge something in. And I did, and it's all coming back, even throughout all those years. I'm so grateful.
That's great. So you've had quite a run. A couple of words come to mind, and one of them is expectations. We're taught that expectations are simply the seeds of resentment. So, you know, if we're expecting anything, we're really just taking a little seed, putting it inside, and, you know, and watering and trying to expose to the sun and so on, and then hoping that that thing's going to bloom. And when it doesn't, we're setting ourselves up for so much, and especially, I mean, the dealing with disappointment, the subject today obviously falls right in line, and expectations can just kill us, can't they? So, you know, but how do we not expect certain things to go certain ways? It's difficult in this life. So to live with no expectations, we would probably live with no plans whatsoever too. So I guess we do have to somehow be lighthearted about, you know, what we do. Make our plans and do our projections and so on, but to kind of predetermine we're not going to be set on our way, you know, or on fire or blow apart just because something doesn't work out. You know, we've got to take the doesn't work out stuff as well as the good stuff without, you know, just like I say, blowing apart. Control is always at the base of everything, isn't it? You know, what can I control and what can't I control? And I think when I learned, that I really had no control over anything, really, you know, that I could just do my best, and even in that, don't have an expectation, just have a hope and know the numbers sort of say that if I live that way, this is pretty much what I can determine will be the outcome, not expect and live on the money that's not made yet and all that kind of stuff, because as we know, you can have the biggest deal in town, and it can even come to fruition, and maybe you don't get paid. You know, something like that. You just don't know until something's complete. And then the reality is, what was important? It was the journey, right? Whether it was completed or not, to whichever way we wanted. So, you know, did we live the journey, you know? And I like when you went back there and you went through a couple of scenes in rehab and so on, and how you smile at yourself and saying, you know, and I remembered that stuff. That 7 months, and doubtless the positive pieces that you pulled or sponged out of there, as you said, you can use today in your program of daily living. And you said another thing I'd like you to comment a bit on was, on the way over, you said, well, now you've become addicted to
AA.
To AA, you know.
And, oh, yeah.
And I thought, well, no, but it is fine. It's like for the believer, for the Christian, for instance, you know, there's no addiction that's satisfactory other than that of God. So if you can be addicted to goodness in whatever that means to a person, then I don't know, it's almost acceptable, except I know in psychological terms and so on, addiction is not good no matter what it is, you know, because it's a compulsion, it's a draw, it's a pressure, it's a stressor, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't need stressors, you know. Yeah. Can you be comfortable in your efforts to control, or can you be comfortable when you're being patient? Like, you can learn to be patient, but is it at the expense of your guts on the inside, or is it, have we come to a place where we're truly relaxed about being patient when things don't you know, and that takes practice. But I think you can do that. I think I've found ways to do that, but I don't always do it. You know, I still snap like everybody else. And anyway, I have a feeling that we're going to be able to get out and listen to maybe one song. What do you think, Mr. Production Man? You're going to be able to give us a song there and, you know, tell everybody about this wonderful program of your own as well as ours. Maybe you want to take a minute and talk about the Block Party and then give us a song.
All right, sure. Sounds good. Thank you very much, Scott. So, yes, you can tune into my radio show here on Whistle FM. It's called the Block Party on Saturday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We've got some great dance music. We had some live DJs in the studio this past Saturday. I'm going to have some more guest DJs here at the Whistle FM studio this Saturday. So some great dance music, different artists in the Toronto dance music scene. So tune in for that show every Saturday here on Whistle FM. And we got a song here to take us to break, some George Michael and Faith. You're listening to Sharing the Burden here on Whistle FM.
I gotta have faith.